Good evening. We're always talking about distractions in our practice. So I thought tonight I would explore it a little bit to try to find what is the meaning of distractions and how should we see them and how should we relate to these things called distractions. As you know, as we all know, the emphasis in Zen practice is to let the mind be open, to allow the mind to be open. We don't say make the mind open, because you cannot force it, cannot make your mind be open, but you can allow it to be open. We let the mind be open. Open to whatever is happening in the moment and to whatever appears. And we let the mind be open to be ready for observing the things that come into our awareness. Whether these things are created by our own mind or they just spontaneously appear to us from the world around us. While we are allowing our mind to be open to whatever appears, the practice also warns about distractions. The warning being, don't let distractions get in the way of your ready mind. But distractions are things that appear in our awareness spontaneously. So how can we be open to these things that appear in our awareness if we are supposed to be wary of them? How do we do that? There's an interesting article I read some years ago, an article about an experiment some Harvard psychologists did, maybe 30 years ago, and they were trying to test a premise. The premise was that people believe that they will see what is there simply by opening their eyes and looking. When they question people, they said, I'll see what's there. All I have to do is keep my eyes open and pay attention. So they wanted to test that premise. So they did an interesting experiment. They showed, they had two groups of people. Of course, every psychology experiment has two groups of people, sometimes more. They showed to these two groups, they showed a video of a basketball game. So they asked one group, watch the game and count the number of passes in the game. Count the number of passes. And they told the other group, just watch the game. You don't have to do anything but watch the game. Now, in the middle of the video, in the middle of the game, some strange things happened. One was that during the middle of the game, a woman with an umbrella walked through the action for about 5 seconds. And the other thing that happened a few moments later, a man in a gorilla suit walked through the action for about 5 seconds. So when they asked the group that was doing the counting, they said, did you notice anything odd? And one third of the people said they did not see a woman with an umbrella. The group that was not counting, every one of them said, I saw the woman with the umbrella. Every one of them. So the attitude of that group, who was not counting, their attitude was, okay, what's going on here? What's going to happen? I'm going to watch this game. Maybe I'll see something. Let's see what I'll see. So their attitude was open to this unknown situation, and they had no expectations. They just watched the game. And nothing on their mind but watch the game. In other words, they were told, just tell me what you see after the game. Just watch the game and tell me what you saw. So they were curious about the game, and they were ready, and they were open to see whatever happened in this game of basketball. Now the other group, the group that was asked to count the passes, part of that group had a closed mind because they had, their attention was very narrow. They were working on a very specific task, count the passes. And anything not helping them achieve that task, they disregarded. And fully one-third of that group who was counting the passes did not see the woman, did not notice the woman, the group that was counting the passes. One-third of them didn't say, "What? I didn't see any woman." Whereas the group who wasn't counting, everybody saw the woman. But so what about the gorilla? The group that was counting the passes, you know, both groups were asked, did you see anything walk across the screen? And the group that was counting passes, half of them said, no, I didn't see anything. And they were, did you see the gorilla? And half of them said, the what? In other words, the gorilla was filtered out of their awareness. Because, you know, it would not help with the task of counting. Whereas, of course, the group that was not counting, everybody saw the gorilla and was surprised by it. Saw it. So the group that was counting, half of them did not see the gorilla. You wonder about that. How could you miss that? But they didn't, because they were so intent on counting passes. Although this is not Zen practice. Not noticing the gorilla because you focused on a task is not our practice. That's not how we let our mind be ready and be present for whatever happens. So, in our practice, we are always exploring, we're always talking about how distractions work, how distractions distract us, and how distractions are constantly arising in our mind, and there's no stopping them. So we're told not to be carried away by distractions, so that we don't see what's happening. But the practice also does not advocate ignoring your distractions or filtering them out of awareness. Our practice emphasizes that we should notice the distractions and then deciding in a split second or a few moments if what we are noticing in our awareness, if it's not part of what we are doing in the moment, then let it go. don't let the distraction overwhelm our awareness and come back to ready mind. But distractions are always arising. And sometimes they're not, we call them distractions, but it turns out maybe they're not. Maybe the things that arise in the mind are important and we should consider them and not just come back to awareness. Maybe the distraction is really an important thing that we should consider. Like if we suddenly remember a task we have to do, or some particular fact that we had been trying to remember, or maybe an appointment we're supposed to go to in a few minutes. What if that comes into mind? That's useful. We shouldn't say, oh, you're just a distraction, go away. Sometimes a distraction is not a negative thing, but really important. So the point is, what our practice tells us to do is be ready to respond to some new information by keeping our mind open and ready. So there is a difference between a distraction and useful information, although both arise in the mind spontaneously, pretty much in the same way. So we shouldn't just make a general rule to ignore all distractions. Sometimes we should consider what it is that's appearing. So in our practice, in Zazen, we sit quietly and we practice without expectations, without striving for any particular result or measuring how we're doing. Simply, we let things come and go in our mind, and we acknowledge all of the things that come and go in our mind, and we put our mind on our breath without knowing what will happen next. Just ready. We call it readiness. Something will happen next. We don't know what it is, but we're ready for it. And we practice that here. And we practice that on our cushion or chair. And when we take that attitude into our daily life, the mind then will not set up, will not create a picture of how the world is supposed to be, and then get disappointed when the world doesn't turn out to be that way. So we practice having no expectations, just awareness of what we're doing and what's going on, and be ready for whatever appears. So when we practice, when we sit, we are focused on a task. Awareness. Awareness of our breath. Awareness of the world around us. This is our task. Awareness. But we're not so focused that the mind becomes closed. So closed that we become unaware of some new information that appears. And this is true even in situations that we artificially create, what we might call a closed world. So consider some situations. Say there's a You go to a boxing match. Two fighters are in the ring, and they're both looking to harm each other, or at least outpoint one another. And so they are practicing, paying attention. What's happening? What's he doing? What's he getting ready to do? Now, if one of these boxers notices a pretty girl in the audience, and if he turns to watch her, if he gets distracted by her, not good for him. So if that becomes a distraction, he has to come right back to what's in front of him. He must come right back and pay attention to what the other boxer is doing with his body. And what he sees is new information. So he avoids the distraction that would take him away from what he's doing in the moment. And this is true for a tennis player who doesn't look up in the stands at her friend when the match is gone, but pays attention to the ball and the other person's participation. Also, samurai warrior doesn't dare get distracted, or it's lethal. In other words, the awareness we cultivate in our practice means we don't just rush at our opponent or our task quickly without awareness. We may spontaneously see or hear or think of something that is valuable or important. So we don't rush too quickly when we do something. We cultivate that kind of awareness on our cushion. So if somebody says, "Did you see the gorilla?" you have to say yes. And as you know, when you go to work, in your work environment, you don't just rush around doing things. Before you do something, you let your mind explore the situation. Whether you're driving an Uber cab or coding or fastening sheet metal, whatever you're doing, you let your mind take in the whole situation so that you can understand what it is you have to do and you can be as creative as possible about it. In other words, by paying attention to what's going on in front of us and what it is we have to do, we give our ideas a chance to emerge. And these are not distractions. These are useful. But if we have an attitude, if we become too obsessed with our practice and say, "I want no distractions, I want nothing coming into my mind, I am not going to change what it is I've decided to do. This is a closed mind and leaves no room for new information or creativity," and sets up conditions for disappointment, or even worse. So a good athlete, a scholar, a business person, an artist, a writer, all of them have their own purpose, and when they work at that purpose, they're focused on it. But they are ready to modify their plan if something new appears. So it's important that we distinguish between useful information, something that can be creative, or something that is a distraction that we just let go. the things that spontaneously appear in our conscious mind come from the mind itself, or from external objects. If we are free of desire, the arising of these things that spontaneously appear are not distractions. If we are free of desire, then there are no distractions. Then the things that appear are either new information or some creative wisdom. It means that the spontaneous things that arise become distractions when we consciously create them because of our desires. So imagine the tennis game where the pro tennis player keeps looking at, if she keeps looking at some handsome guy in the stands, then the ball will go. If the desire arises, then distractions arise and we are at risk for failure. But we do that all the time in our daily life. You know, don't you sometimes find that you take your eye off the ball, as we say? Get distracted, take your eye off the ball. This means we got distracted and we let the distraction carry us away. And then it becomes very hard to do what we should do. So if we nurture these distractions, we really are taking ourselves out of the game. So there's no need to fear distractions, you know, if we're ready to let them go. When we recognize this is a distraction, nothing useful here according to what I'm doing. And we don't need to close off the mind to prevent distractions. Well, we can't anyhow. These things just arise. So we, in our practice, we do not try to cut off distractions. We just simply keep our awareness, maintain our awareness, and pay attention to whatever appears. If we do that, we will see the gorilla. We won't miss the lady with the umbrella. So if whatever spontaneously appears in our mind, if it's not useful to what we should be doing, let's let it go. It's a distraction, let it go. And recognize it as just simply some desire that arose, and let it go. So, on the other hand, what appears in our mind may be useful, may be valuable, may be important, and may be creative. So the important point in our practice is to keep this ready mind and to make the distinction. It's not necessary to have a gatekeeper mind that keeps everything out. Our practice is about cultivating a mind that is fluid and accepting and willing to make choices when things appear, and having the courage and determination to let go of it if it's not useful. Does anyone have a question tonight? Yes, please.
What if you cannot tell whether or not something that is arising is useful?
Now, sometimes we make a mistake. That will happen. Sometimes we dismiss whatever arises in our mind and say, well, it's just a distraction, and later realize, say, that was important, or the opposite. And this kind of thing happens. But if we continue our practice, we will develop the skill. More and more we will develop the skill to recognize what we should accept in and consider and what we should say, no, not this time. It's practice that helps us make this distinction. But we should also be ready to make a mistake sometimes. Thank you. Yes, please.
About the Harvard experiment with counting the passes, the one group who didn't see the gorilla still has the knowledge of the amount of passes. So like they have, it's like, you can't have it all, right? Like the people who paid attention to the process still know something that the group who generally watched the game didn't. So my question is, how do you know when it's more important to pay attention to the big picture or to answer a specific question?
Hmm. Well, yeah. It depends with the on the situation. Depends on the situation. In our daily life, we are asked to pay attention to specific things. Here is your task. And so we pay attention to it. And hopefully, as we are paying attention to it, some creative things arise. We like that. And it's important to know that when something arises that is not useful, push it away, let it go. And then there are times when we don't need to be specific, that we just open up to the world around us. How we come to that balance is our practice, especially in the here in the West. We're bringing our practice to the very world you're talking about, where we are faced with specific tasks all the time. So what do we do with distractions? It's an important point. And I believe that the practice here is still kind of young, 50 years or so. We're still learning how to do it. But I think we have the outlines of how to do it. Thank you. Yes, please, Charmila.
I had a kind of a similar question, and I was just thinking, how do you know whether it is a useful distraction or a distraction you should let go? So, for example, there could be two cases. For example, if I'm watching a movie, I'm watching some important news on TV, and suddenly I remember about an appointment, a dentist appointment that flashes on my screen. It's a useful information. Put it off, leave.
Yeah, go.
But if I am picking up my child from an activity and I'm driving and this thing flashes on my phone, an appointment, at that time the big picture is important. I have to drive safe. I have to pick up the kid on time. I cannot let the kid stand at a certain place. And then I have to be careful about the pedestrians and myself.
Yes.
So the appointment is, I can take care of it. So I think it's important, like what you're doing at that time.
It's about what we call priority.
Right.
If it's a choice of watching the television or going to the dentist, we know. If it's a choice of picking up our son from school or going to the dentist, what is the priority? So we all need to develop the judgment to make good decisions about priorities. And we can do that.
Yeah, I was just thinking that the big picture, so it's in the second case, the big picture is like very important. And in the first case where you're watching the movie, you can be specific, you know, appointment, specific, jump onto the distraction. Whereas picking up somebody, driving, you know, the big picture is important, what's going on, and kind of a lot of evaluating in the second one.
You know, your own sincerity will help you determine what is the priority in every conflict situation. Your own heart and your own sincerity. Your own sincerity provides the criteria for establishing priorities. But if we lack sincerity and we are kind of disinterested, then we don't know what we're doing. Thank you. Oh, yes, please.
As the practice goes on and you get better at it, is it that you develop a quicker response to inspect and let go, or the frequency of those distractions also comes down?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's been said that centuries ago in Japan, samurai warriors used this practice to help them battle so they could make good decisions and they wouldn't get distracted. And same thing can be applied to us right here in this culture right now, in the kind of lives we're living. Everybody is kind of samurai. Everybody. Something's coming at you all the time. Maybe not life-threatening, but we continually have to know how to respond to whatever comes up. So the practice can help us in the same way that it helped those warriors 500 years ago or 300 years ago. You know, the guys you see in the movies. So I think it applies to us today. Help us make better decisions. And feel really plugged in, if you know what I mean. That's the practice. Thank you. Yes, please.
I have to say that unfortunately with the technology, and actually it's not just the Western world, like we're turning the entire world into hyper-distracted, even from the young age, like just really like low attention span, just move on to, you know, like the Pavlovian, the dog. Just like the, what's the next, that kind of a paradigm. And it's not actually, even in Asia, it's the same situation, you know, like the younger kids, just always like, I mean, I'm overgeneralizing obviously, but still, it is 25, 30 years of really fundamental transformations that are happening to the brain, because this generation of like my children that will be growing, you know, they will never have known a number of them, just simple sitting down, face-to-face conversation type interactions. You know, that's very unfortunate direction in which just, I mean, obviously there are important use cases that are served that were not available without the technology, but I'm wondering whether I have an overly pessimistic view about where things are headed with that, or it's just...
Well, everybody recognizes the problem you're describing. You know, we are no longer farmers who live a very simple life and can pay attention to things that grow and how we can help things grow and how we take care of the land. Very few of us experience that anymore. And the further we get away from that kind of simplicity, the more problem we have that you describe. But instead of being pessimistic about it, we need to say we can find a way to be just as aware and just as present in the world as our ancestors 300 years ago. We have to have an optimistic view that we will find a way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one reason why the interest in this practice is increasing in today's world, because people are saying, we've got to find a way. It's become overwhelming. So you're right, but let's be optimistic. Thank you. Oh, yes, Richard.
I've seen that video of the gorilla walking on the passes, the basketball passes.
Oh, you've seen it.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And it shows how powerful our attention can be focused on one thing or another, or away from something. My question, it's a thought and maybe a question too. The instruction to focus on the passes is kind of analogous to when we grow up in a culture, we're trained to focus on certain things and not on others, trained to value things and devalue things. Education is a kind of form of indoctrination into a culture, and for better or for worse, in America or even in other countries. And so to ignore the number of passes, to just see what there is before us, is it possible to become free from cultural upbringing, to disregard cultural norms and examine assumptions? Is it possible to be free from that practice?
Oh, that's what we're all trying to do. To be part of our culture and follow the rules and the norms together when we know they are helpful. But sometimes we have to go outside the boundary and break a norm. And it's just we have to learn how and when. And that's what we're always trying to discover. Yeah, it's possible. I believe it's possible. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh. Excuse me.
So you gave like two possibilities of like dealing with distractions, which is to kind of like let them go or kind of like try to keep them out. But there's also like you can remove like the source of the distractions. And so, as kind of like an extreme example, if I'm like out enjoying my day on Sunday, and then I like realize, oh, I have to like do that thing for work, like there is like a possibility that I could just quit my job and then remove all those distractions. And so, like, why isn't the answer to like just like remove like the sources of distractions like as much as you can, like in your life, I guess?
I don't think we want to do that. We'll wind up sitting in a corner somewhere with nothing to do. No, we have to be engaged in the world. We all feel the need to be engaged somehow. Sometimes it's a very active kind of work. Sometimes it's not so active, but we all have to be engaged. And so those kinds of distractions will come up. Some artist may be painting a beautiful portrait and takes a break and goes away and says, you know, I should have used yellow over there. This just comes up because of our engagement in life will cause the mind to continually look for creativity. That's what our mind does. It tries to be creative. So the source of distractions is here. It's not the job. It's here. And don't do away with this. It can be useful. Thank you. Umar.
Yes. So when distractions come up, you know, it's like saying, calling, you know, looking at it and judging it and calling it a distraction. That's one way of looking at it and saying this is a distraction. And something that we're focused on, we're doing, is not a distraction. But if we were to just become aware of it and just take it as for what it is there a certain kind of attitude to take towards that, saying that this is just, what would that attitude be without being, you know, saying, being hard with it, like, this is a distraction, this is not, you know? Where distraction comes up, even in practice, how do we mentally hold it? Because if we hold it too hard, then the mind becomes hard. The mind becomes hard, then the posture becomes hard, and then the body starts to tire. So what attitude must we take towards this kind of distraction, even if something comes up in practice or in real life?
Well, so we, in addition to having a mind that's ready to notice distractions, we also keep our mind ready to notice how we are doing. So hopefully we are aware of our body, and when we become aware that it's getting kind of tight and stiff, we say, wait a minute, maybe I'm holding on to something too much. So we let our body also tell us how the mind is doing. So we pay attention to everything. We listen to everything. And just through experience, we get wiser. There's no simple answer. Just keep trying. Thank you. Yes, Columbine.
We're always kind of prioritizing or saying what is a distraction or what's more valuable. We're always judging things. And it seems like a source of conflict for almost all conflict is people have different ideas of what is valuable and what is not. And so it seems that that's sort of the source of almost all conflicts in life. So is there a way to maybe not place judgment on distractions and maybe be a little bit more harmonious with other people? Mm-hmm. Like be more open to how, just instead of saying, like, for example, like, if you're at work and you're trying to work on something and somebody wants to go work on something else, you might think it's a distraction and stop, pay attention, you know. But then you set up this dynamic of maybe disagreement. They might think it's valuable.
So when there's differences of opinion about what's important, we should avoid making judgments about good or bad and talk about what's more useful, what's most useful. Everything has some kind of value that way. But it's when we start saying good or bad that we get into trouble. So those are the judgments we try to avoid and rather say, what's the most... Let's consider what's the most creative thing to do in this situation. And if we look at things that way, we avoid the good and the bad and avoid the trouble that comes with that. So that you make a good point, because that's what's going on in our political process. We keep saying good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, rather than say, let's together figure out the most useful thing to do. We seem to have a hard time doing that. But that's the best way to be. Thank you.
I just thought about something. Sometimes I think, like Omar was saying, there's a certain type of attitude that is needed to decide whether the distractions are a good distraction to pay attention to or not. The beginner's mind book, the last chapter, last time I said, is basically not to get too overwhelmed with something or not to get too discouraged with something, because if you do that, for example, if you're too excited about something, some news or something, you build a wall suddenly. And you stop seeing what's going around you and feel that the one thing you're focused on is the important thing. But if you don't calm, and yes, for awareness, you're listening to the thing, then you're not having that wall. You're able to see the big picture. So I was just thinking about the soccer games my daughter used to play in, and whenever those games would happen, there would be, in the other team, there would be kids that I know from the same school and the parents that I know. So even if, like, my daughter's team would be losing the game, and in the last minute, and then there are some kind of bullies in the other team, and I feel it's unfair, and something happens in the last minute, and they end up winning. Instead of being, excitement is important because the team that was losing won, but at the same time not be so overly excited that you ignore the fact that the other team also are kids. And they were winning almost till the last minute and lost. And not be so distracted and excited that you say something or publicly say something or show your excitement in a way that you're hurting and lose the big picture. The big picture is to have a healthy game. I was just thinking about that, just how important it is to stay calm and not allow that wall to build of either excitement or... I often see, you know, when the teams lose, they're so discouraged that they start talking, that's not fair, somebody did this, and end up kind of losing the big picture.
Okay. Maybe these the games that we play these days that create so much excitement, maybe we should play them as if we were playing chess. Nobody gets excited playing chess. Wouldn't be much of a Super Bowl or basketball game. But maybe we need a little bit of that attitude. Let's carefully consider what's going on. So yeah, you raise a good point about excitement. Maybe there's too much of that. Thank you.